Welcome, Lisa. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Again, I understand that you first self-published your book, Still Alice. Tell us about its evolution to New York Times bestseller.
Well, I was a new writer and unknown, and I did what all new writers do when they finish their manuscript. You send out query letters to literary agents who might represent your book to then go on and hopefully sell it to a publishing house who will then publish your book. But I didn't have any luck with the traditional route. I sent out about 100 query letters, and I'm still to this day, I unearthed 19 rejection letters the other day that I thought I had thrown them all out long ago. So I was really left with no choice. The choice was either to stick the manuscript in a drawer and go do something else, or to self-publish it and give it a shot. So I self-published it for 10 months and sold it out of the trunk of my car here on Cape Cod and did a lot of online marketing. I also hired a book publicity firm called Kelly and Hall Book Publicity out of Marblehead. And after 10 months, generated enough of a buzz and was introduced to a literary agent. And then the book sold at auction to Simon & Schuster.
Your focus was not on the caregivers, but on the patient. Tell us about that.
Well, this was really the reason why I wanted to write this story. I wasn't a novelist before I wrote Still Alice, and the seed for the story for me was watching my grandmother with Alzheimer's and not understanding what she was going through. I have a PhD in neuroscience, so I figured it was my job in the family to help learn as much as I could about Alzheimer's and pass that information along to my relatives so they could better take care of her. It was mostly my aunts who were doing the heavy lifting with the caregiving. And everything I read was written by a caregiver or a clinician or a scientist or a social worker. They were all views from the outside looking in. And so I could never get a real satisfying answer to the question, what does it feel like to have this? And so that's why I wanted to tell it from her point of view.
Your next project was Left Neglected. Talk about that.
So Left Neglected came out of a curiosity. I kept coming across little snippets, clinical vignettes over the years in my training as a neuroscientist about people with left neglect. It's this very strange neurological condition in which the brain no longer understands or pays attention to anything on the left side of anything, including the left side of you. So if you have this, you can still see, your eyes still work, your vision is intact, and you're not paralyzed. You could move your left arm and leg if only you knew that they belong to you. So it's this very bizarre condition, and I wanted to write about someone who has it because I just really wanted to understand what it's like to live in a whole world only aware of half of it. And I sort of thought of this condition the more I learned about it and the more people I came to know who have it, that it's really this, you know, here we have this very extreme inattention, and it seems so bizarre and abnormal, but it really is this great metaphor for all the ways we every day ignore so many things and call it normal. You know, we're all so busy and multitasking, and we're spread so thin. We're all doing five things at once, and when you spread your attention out that thin, your brain really can't handle that many things at once. What are you missing out on? What are you neglecting in your days?
The main character was a multitasking, high-powered woman executive. Was she a composite of people that you knew, or was there actually one person that you based her on?
Oh, she's definitely not based on one person. She is the me I could have been if I had stayed in corporate America. She's like a lot of working moms. I don't think that we working moms really have it figured out. I don't think we can have it all at once. So trying to, you know, go full throttle at work and then have three kids at home and, you know, maintain intimacy with your husband and maintain a household. And she's just, you know, really juggling way too many balls at once. And so I get her. I think a lot of women try to do too much at once.
Now, you're a Harvard scientist. And what advice would you have for someone of the sciences who wants to write a book that's accepted by the general public and not just a scientific journal?
Well, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I didn't go to school for writing, so you have to, it's vastly different. Scientific writing is very dry and to the point, and there's not a lot of creative juiciness in there. The books I recommend, I was pointed to some really great books when I began. On Writing by Stephen King, Writing Down the Bones by Natalie Goldberg, and The Artist's Way by Julia Kerman are great places to get started.
We recently just previewed the Stephen King book. It's really such a different but inspiring work by him.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you have a mission when you're writing your novels, or are you a storyteller?
I love this question. Primarily, I'm a storyteller to begin with, because if I don't entertain you, then you're not going to read the book. You're going to shut it and go on to read something else. So I really have to entertain you with a great story first. But you're right. The neuroscientist in me can't resist trying to teach the general public a little something about how the brain works and how it reveals aspects of who we are and our humanity. So I am trying to get a little education in there. And I like the idea of giving a voice to the voiceless, or a face to someone who isn't well understood.
What is your next project that you're working on now?
The next book I'm writing is called Love, Anthony, and it's about a boy with autism.
Why that topic?
So this one is very dear and close to my heart. My closest cousin, who is like a sister to me, her son, who's the same age as my oldest daughter, has autism. And so this is something our family has been living with and struggling with and trying to understand.
With so much being written about traumatic brain injury with returning veterans and so on, have you been receiving feedback from veterans about your book?
Yeah, I have. And it's been incredibly rewarding to hear from not only veterans, but other people who have had traumatic brain injuries or injuries that sort of act like traumatic brain injuries. And one of the things that the book has done for people is to not only give them a sense of, again, a voice that what they go through is something that others go through as well. So it's less isolating and alienating. But there's also this organization called New England Handicap Sports, which is a real organization that I highlight in the book that gets people with these kinds of injuries and disabilities on the mountain or in kayaks in the summer. They get them moving again in ways that sort of seem impossible at first. And it's not just New England Handicap Sports. They will write to me or write to this organization and then find a similar group that's near wherever they live in the country.
Are any of your projects being considered for movies or television?
So fun that you asked this. Yeah, we're moving ahead with a movie deal for Still Alice as we speak.
And will that be on the big screen or TV?
Big screen.
Big screen.
Will you have any part of that, choosing a screenwriter, or will you be a part of that project?
I'm new to this process, and what I've told the producers is that I am here to facilitate and not get in the way.
I think that's sage advice after speaking with screenwriter Diane Lake today. Okay. Yes. are you still doing scientific research, or are you spending all your time writing these days?
I'm a full-time novelist and mother, and that's about all I can handle.
And how much of your time is taken up by promotion and book tours? I know marketing the book is so much a part of an author's life these days. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging, and I'm learning a lot as I go. In the first 2 to 3 months after the book is released, it's pretty intense in terms of travel and book events, at least for me. And then it can slow down and you can pick and choose. I also work with a speakers bureau because I write about things like Alzheimer's and traumatic brain injuries. I have opportunities to talk to groups about this. So I do travel a bit and speak to organizations like the Alzheimer's Association. Again, it's sort of, you know, you learn as you go. And this summer, the trade paperback of Left Neglected came out in July. And I said, I live on Cape Cod. I'm not getting on a plane. Everybody's here. So my book events this summer have been local, which is nice.
What tips do you have for writers who have that first novel in their drawer and are wanting to get it out there?
Well, you know, I'd say that self-publishing is a route to consider. I think years ago, it certainly carried a very large stigma, and it still does, and I understand why. I mean, there are no gatekeepers for self-publishing, so anyone can publish anything. But it can be a legitimate road to market these days, sort of like we've seen with independent filmmakers and musicians who can put out their own record through CD Baby and you know, gather fans. You can gather fans through self-publishing and sort of demonstrate a proof of concept to publishers. Like, look, I've got an audience, an enthusiastic readership.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed reading your book, and I encourage anyone to pick it up. Thank you.
Thank you so much.